Anyway, with the testimony this week of General Petraeus, there's a new book out that just really caught my interest, and I haven't been able to put it down. It's called War and Decision Inside the Pentagon at the Dawn of the War on Terrorism. Douglas Feith is with us, the author, because he was there. How are you, Doug? Welcome back.
It's good to talk to you.
First of all, you detail a lot of the unreported debate over whether creating a democratic Iraq should be defined as a U.S. strategic goal, an idea that was opposed by Rumsfeld and Feith, and you also ran through the list of possibilities of things that can go wrong in this war.
Yes, I did. The debate about democracy is an important one because I think a lot of people in the United States are now confused about why we went to war in Iraq. And Secretary Rumsfeld was pushing very hard that we should be absolutely clear that the reason we went to war in Iraq was to deal with the threats that the Saddam Hussein regime posed to us and to our interests. And, of course, it was going to be our responsibility after we removed Saddam to have a government come in, and it would be useful if that government were democratic. But we did not go to war in Iraq in order to spread democracy by the sword. We went to war in Iraq to safeguard American interests.
Well, even though this is the argument I make all the time here, is that in a post-9/11 world, you just couldn't risk the possibility of him aligning with terror groups like al-Qaeda and the possibility of weapons of mass destruction, which he did previously use against his own people. And it seems like the left just wants to forget that and just scream over and over and over and over again, compulsively, almost hypnotically, there's no WMDs.
Well, that's right. What I was interested in doing in my book was trying to crack the conventional wisdom that's been cultivated by the mainstream media for years now. Part of it is what you've highlighted, that this argument that there was no WMD threat in Iraq. And that's not what our intelligence people found after Saddam was overthrown. It was true that we made a terrible mistake in relying on the CIA's bad intelligence that said that we would find chemical and biological weapons stockpiles in Iraq. And we didn't find those stockpiles, and that was a terrible error, and it really hurt our credibility. But the fact is, and this is a major discussion in my book, we did find that Saddam Hussein had facilities, he had personnel, he had capabilities, he had the intention to have chemical and biological weapons, and he had put himself in a position where he could have produced those chemical and biological weapon stockpiles in 3 to 5 weeks. And
then why don't we ever hear this? Why is this now sort of conventional wisdom that we made a mistake?
Well, partly because a case that was largely valid, in my view, did have mistakes in it. And the critics of the war have chosen to ignore the part that was largely valid and focus exclusively on the mistakes. And unfortunately, the administration has not done a very good job of clarifying the picture.
Tell me a little bit about this account that you outline in the book of the Defense Department's plan to avoid a prolonged military occupation by launching this new Iraqi government that was approved by the president and later buried by policy disputes among senior officials. What happened?
Well, that's a very sad story, and it's an important story. And there are 25 or 30 books that have been written about Iraq, not one of which deals with this. The plan that the United States government had going into Iraq was that we would pursue a strategy, as the president called it, of liberation, not occupation. And as part of that, we developed, and it was developed in my office, a plan for political transition in Iraq that would have put Iraqis in charge of their own government early, soon after the overthrow of Saddam. And it was based on the idea that in Afghanistan, when we overthrew the Taliban government, we did not set up an occupation government. The Afghans ran their government right from the beginning, as soon as we overthrew the Taliban, and we wanted to do a similar thing in Iraq. And unfortunately, this idea was opposed by the top officials in the State Department and the CIA, because they had a really strong antagonism toward the the Iraqi Democratic Opposition that it lived outside of Saddam's control. And they were afraid that if we set up an Iraqi government quickly, it would largely be dominated by that external democratic opposition. And unfortunately, the plan that the president approved in early March, because the president did not accept the State Department view when it was debated in Washington, that the plan got set aside when Ambassador Bremer went to Iraq, because he basically lined up with the old State Department view. So the view that had prevailed at state lost in Washington but won in Baghdad. And as a result, the United States had an occupation government for 14 months in Iraq, which was, I think, a very costly error.
We're running out of time here, but then you're pretty critical of Bremer and how Rumsfeld had treated him as a field commander, giving him authority and extraordinary freedom of action here. But more importantly, you remind people in this book that the 9/11 attack was a new phenomenon, and not just because it hit Americans on American soil, but it was not an act of political theater. You write, rather, it was the first successful case of terrorism of mass destruction, and it didn't start the war between the U.S. and terrorists. It was not the first fatal terrorist operation. It was not even such the first attack by al-Qaeda. It, however, became the point at which many Americans concluded we were at war. So in that sense, you know, we seem to forget that.
Yeah, that's the fact that 9/11, what 9/11 did is it showed people that there were terrorists out there who were not just looking to call attention to a cause. They were actually looking to cause mass destruction. And that's what focused us right after 9/11 on the special danger of terrorists getting access to WMD, and we noticed that the leading state supporters of terrorism around the world were also the leading proliferation countries.
All right, Douglas Feith, you know, for those of us that really, really, really want to get deep inside this issue, and I know liberals will ignore this, but because they have a political agenda and they're now invested in defeat at any cost here, but it really brings you inside the decision-making and really how difficult it is and was and continues to be in terms of a strategy that was thought out after the attacks on 9/11. But Douglas Feith, great book, appreciate it. It's called War and Decision. It's on Hannity.com. It's now in bookstores this week everywhere, inside the Pentagon, at the dawn of the war on terrorism. Doug, thanks for being with us.
Good to talk to you, Sean.
All right, my friend. 800-941-SEAN is our number, but you'll have to hold that until Monday. Why? Because we're out of time. But we have a great Hannity's America Sunday night at 9 o'clock. It's 60 minutes for the rest of America. We're going to fully and completely bring you inside Barack Obama's association with William Ayers, this friendly relationship. Also, we'll have our hot seat back this week with Lanny Davis. Oh, and we're starting a new segment, Ask Dr. Laura, this week, which is going to be a lot of fun. So that's coming up on Hannity's America, 9 o'clock on Sunday. Hannity and Combs tonight. Yes, I'll be in 9 o'clock tonight. Full and complete details of all the latest political developments. Well, that's it. We're out of time. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. See you tonight. See you Sunday night. Back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.